cult disappeared, that the peyote cult came up from Mexico and overwhelmed the plains cultures with the outer object of vision and religious contemplation removed, the inward search began. I think something like that's what has happened here. In the 60s, there was a fundamental disillusionment about the political life in the United States. Also, a disintegration of the religious position. Look what happened to the Catholic Church, you know, with Vatican II, with the turnover there and the unsettling. The turn inward comes along. And I think it's that inward search that is dominant today. I noticed that I've been receiving advertisements for a series of books being published by the Paulist Press. Now, that's a Roman Catholic press. A series of books on Western mystics and translations of mystics whom you couldn't find in bookstores. The accent had been on the institutional religion, and now comes up what might be called the Pentecostal or inward experiential side. People like Dionysius the Areopagite and Meister Eckhart and John of the Cross. Try to find those in your popular libraries. Now they're going to be published. And the advertisement said that the 60s was for Oriental mysticism and the 70s is going to be for the Western. Well, here's an influence now being accepted by an institution that traditionally has been a little bit disturbed about the mystical, because there one comes in touch with the mysteries alone, you know, on one's own, inwardly, whereas the institution has been officially the one purveyor of the grace of the divine salvation. It's another kind of religion.
There's a difference between dogma and...
and the experience.
Yes.
And all this thing about the mysticism of track, you know, running, and the rapture and ecstasy in sexual experience and all. These are all mystical. These are all related to the loss of ego, its tenacity. Do you see? Yielding to a larger breaking open, as it were. That's what mysticism is. And these are the foregrounds. These are the shallows of that depth.
Mm. What about the desire on the part of literally hundreds of thousands, even millions, to pursue a master teacher, a guru? Is that something that's gone on over the centuries?
Yes, and I think that is bad news. I really do. There's one quotation I ran into in a medieval text, the Quest del Saint Graal, which I have frequently quoted in my lectures, and I don't know whether I've ever published it in a book. I think not. But I ran into it some years ago, and it just hit me like a bullet as being the essence of what I would call the European or Western spirituality. The knights of King Arthur's court were seated at table, and Arthur would not let the meal be served until an adventure had occurred. And indeed, an adventure did occur. The Grail itself appeared, carried by angelic miracle, and covered, however, with a cloth. And everyone was in rapture and amazement, and then it withdrew. And then Arthur's nephew, Gawain, stood up and said, "I propose a vow. I propose that we should all go in pursuit of this Grail to behold it unveiled." It was determined that that is what they would do. And then occurred these lines that seemed to me so wonderful. They thought it would be a disgrace to go forth in a group. Each entered the forest at the point that he had chosen. He had chosen. Where there was no path and where it was darkest. Where it was darkest and there was no way or path. Now, if there's a way or path, it's someone else's way. And the guru has a path for you. He knows where you are on it. He knows where he is on it, namely way ahead. And all you can do is get to be as great as he is along that way, which he knows. This is a continuation of the dependency situation of childhood. Maturity consists in outgrowing that and becoming one's own authority for one's life. And what seems so romantic in the West to Oriental people, this quest for the unknown, What is unknown is the fulfillment of your own unique life, the like of which has never existed on the earth. And you're the only one can do it. People can give you clues, you know, how to fall down and how to stand up, but when to fall and when to stand and when you are falling and when you are standing, this only you can know. And to do it in the way of your own talents is the only way to do it. Now, if one goes out for athletics, the coach doesn't tell you exactly how to hold your arms. He watches you run and sees how it is and then tunes you up a little bit. It's your way, and that's the way of the whole life, it seems to me. This is why I don't think the guru thing is as great as it's supposed to be. It's an oriental idea where the uniqueness of the individual is utterly disregarded. I think I'm right there. I've spent a long time with Oriental studies. I see nothing that does not say each has the law of his caste or his tradition or his church or whatnot to follow. There's never any indication that you've got it right in yourself and that no one knows. Yeats, in A Vision, speaks of the two masks, as he calls it, that a life wears. The first is the primary mask that the society has put upon you, the technique of life that the society puts on you. But at adolescence, the individual has a sense of a potentiality within himself that has to throw off that mask and find what Yeats calls the antithetical mask, the mask contrary to that of the society. And then comes that struggle so characteristic of youth in our society. In a traditional society, you're not allowed to follow the antithetical. The primary is there like a cookie mold on you. But here comes this struggle. Now, if the family or society opposes that, it becomes rather fierce. But a gradual yielding with care to the learning on the part of the young person of what his own footsteps can do for him. This is the proper way. And then you watch the trajectories of the different lives in different directions. So I'm not for the guru thing.
No.
It's simply the transfer of the submission to the father to a father for your adulthood, you know, which means you're not growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, the psychoanalyst does that a good deal. The whole idea of a transfer. What do you transfer to the analyst? You transfer all the parental systems of relationships. So you're still bound. You're still a submissive and dependent person.
When you talk about maturity and adulthood, I think of something Christ said, you must become as a little child to enter the kingdom of heaven. Let's juxtapose that with adulthood and maturity. How do those two come together?
I think what he's talking about is the spontaneity. I think the answer to this comes from Nietzsche in his Zarathustra in the introduction. It's curious to bring Nietzsche in as the one for Christ because typically he's thought to be the Antichrist, you know. He thought so himself a little bit. But these are two great teachers, and great teachers frequently say similar things in different languages. Nietzsche says there are three stages of the spirit. I love this one. The first is that of the camel. The camel gets down on his knees and says, put a load on me. This is the condition, you know, of youth learning. Put a load on me. When the camel is well loaded, he gets to his feet and runs out into the desert. This is the place where he's going to be alone to find himself. And he's transformed into a lion. The second transformation then is of the lion. And the task and function and deed of the lion is to kill a dragon. And that dragon's name is Thou Shalt. On every scale of the dragon, a law is written, some dating from 2000 BC, to some others from yesterday's morning paper. And the dragon is to be killed. And if it's a well-loaded camel, it's a potent lion, and the dragon is killed. You see, they're two different quite things. One, submission, obedience, learning, and now you're a potent lion. And when the dragon is killed, the lion is transformed into a child. And Nietzsche's word is a wheel rolling out of its own center, ein Aus sich rollendes Rad.